A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 71. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about October. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. So yes, we're talking about October, about the story of a young teacher who's going to blunder into an international conspiracy and become a strange test subject for... Well, for something very strange, Brian, for a strange mix of science and fantasy, I suppose.
Very strange indeed, yes.
It was a ITV miniseries broadcast in 1998. It went out in 3 episodes, and we think the original runtime of the episodes was about 50 minutes each, although, as we'll discuss later on, there is some slight confusion about the runtime of this show. But anyway, it's 3 episodes from ITV, and it's now about 12 years old as we record this.
Yes, and that is October spelt with a K.
Yeah, we should point that out.
Yeah, just to avoid confusion. October was written and directed by Stephen Gallagher, who has not directed a great deal, but he certainly has written a lot, including a couple of Doctor Who serials. He's written for Bugs. And after October, he went on to create a show called The 11th Hour, which I think you may get to hear us talk about another time. October had an interesting mix of the paranormal and science, especially medical science, and a sort of conspiracy action thriller. And that made a really interesting, varied sort of mix.
Yes, absolutely. There's all sorts of different elements thrown into this series. There's even, I think it's clear from Stephen Gallagher's own notes, that there was quite an intention to have a few horror elements in there. So there's one or two very traditional horror movie sort of moments. And particularly in the locations and the sets. And you have to say, this is a show with some very good locations and sets. A lot of it was filmed in Europe, and it's got quite a European feel to it, Brian. It's a sort of Euro thriller in a way.
Yes, it certainly has that feel. And it throws all sorts of things at you, all sorts of different styles, which is kind of a neat approach.
Yeah, it's almost, it feels a little bit like some of the Bourne films that have come out since, with a man in trouble on continental Europe and...
On the run.
Exactly, yes. So we'll get to some of that as we go along.
Many aspects of it do have a definite Bourne identity type of feel to it, which is interesting. It worked well. So the setup of the story is quite complex and involved, and it starts in Chechnya, of all places, war-torn Chechnya, where a group of Russian pilots have been given this new drug, or rather an old drug that has been contaminated and wasn't supposed to be released, but these pilots have been given this, in effect, new drug that has some very unusual side effects to it. While they are lying unconscious or in comas or some such thing, there are some strange things that start to happen with this. And we are also introduced to a drug company called Riesinger Genu, and it is looking for its next new big thing. Their biggest selling drug is about to come off of patent, and they are looking for some new big selling product that will allow them to continue to be successful as a company.
Yeah, absolutely. They're looking for the next big thing to come along. And they seem to have stumbled across it because, as you say, they have this contaminated drug, which is referred to as ephetaline. So it's a fictional drug called ephetaline, but that's being contaminated. And they are intending to market this drug as mentazone. And as we say, they've discovered these very peculiar side effects on this group of Russian pilots who seem to have been adversely affected. They're all lying in a coma of some description. And I think, I don't know if we can say, Brian, right at the start, it's given away fairly early on, I think, that there's something weird happening to these pilots, so that when you do something to one of the pilots, all the other pilots in this hospital ward seem to feel it. And we see that reflex happening very early on, I think, don't we?
Yes, in the first few minutes, you get this idea that there is a connection between these pilots in this case, but the people who have been given mentazone and are in comas but are somehow connected, then you get these ideas of maybe telepathy or maybe something else. But there is definitely something strange there.
Absolutely. We get that very early on. We've got this connection of science, but as you say, it's drifting into the paranormal with some form of connection between these unconscious patients lying in a hospital ward somewhere in war-torn Chechnya.
And we get further dips into the paranormal as the story goes on.
And then we get our sort of grounding. We get our everyman character, who's going to be our hero, who's a character called Jim Harper. And he's a young English teacher, and he's working at the international school in Gstaad in Switzerland. And he's a sort of, as I've said, he's the everyman, he's an ordinary character. But he's interested, sort of romantically interested, in the older sister of one of his pupils, a very attractive young woman called Rochelle Jeannot, who, as her name suggests, is connected to the drug firm Reisinger Jeannot. And as we'll go along, we'll find out that she's sort of the heiress to this drug company, but she's also a scientist herself. And she now seems to be working as effectively the chief executive of this company and sort of driving them on in their goal to find the new super drug that's going to revive their fortunes. But with her brother's help, our hero, Jim Harper, tricks his way into a top secret conference that's being held at a mountain base, right on the top of a mountain, where the drug company are going to discuss some of the effects that they've found from this new product, Mentazone.
It's a bit strange how he is somehow able to get into this very high-security conference and how this transpires that he gets there, but he does get there, and it's a great starting off point for the story. This mountaintop base is also a research center, and they are doing a great deal of scientific research, medical research, and they are testing Mentazone on a series of dogs, possibly other things, but they have a whole bunch of dogs that they're using to test Mentazone on. And Jim has this mission of his where he's breaking into this conference, or sneaking into the conference with a fake pass, to get to Rochelle and to talk to her and to try to make something of that. And she doesn't want him to be there, and she has the company and the science and the drugs. She has all of that at heart rather than being concerned for him. So she tells security to remove him. He goes on the run. There is this big thing where he's trying to escape and ends up being injured very, very seriously, questions he might die, and apparently they have very little available to help him. You know, they finally catch him, he's almost dead, and in order to save him, of course, they inject him with Mentazone, the only available thing they can use, the only available stimulant. And what happens then is a bit of a question mark, because it's a little bit strange from there, which is part of what makes this interesting.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's been injected with the Mentazone, which we sort of knew he was going to be in a way once we'd learnt about the existence of this drug. And it all happens fairly quickly right at the start of the first episode. And there's some confusion because the drug company think he has died anyway, but of course he hasn't died. He is revived, and then he manages to escape from this mountaintop research base. And while he's trying to get away from this drug company and from the drug company's security or their thugs who are trying to track him down, Jim Harper will go on to discover what the effects of this drug are on his body, and how he has become an almost unique test. Well, he is a unique test specimen, because he's the one who's conscious and alive, as opposed to the Russian pilots who are all languishing in some form of coma.
So this becomes a story about a man on the run, but it's a man who is under the effects of mentazone. And as we'll go on to talk about a little later, there are some very strange effects. We've already hinted about these connections between the people who have taken mentazone and perhaps some kind of telepathy and so on.
They've been flying night missions. They couldn't stay awake, so I supplied the unit doctor with ephetaline 10 minutes after taking the shots. They were all like this.
EPL never does this.
I traced the product number. It was a faulty batch.
Traced it where?
Our own records. It was contaminated in production. Someone made the decision to dump it on the market here instead of destroying it.
So getting into the characters, we have Jim Harper, who we already mentioned, played by Stephen Tompkinson. He's the young teacher who sort of very quickly gets in over his head. And he's definitely an everyman character. And in many ways, this is a story about someone getting in over his head. And that is Jim Harper. And it's very much about how he rises to that or doesn't rise to it, and how he deals with it and how he addresses it through the course of the story. We also have Rachelle Janoux, who we also mentioned, played by Lydia Englert. And she was very much into the science and the company and making sure things work with that. And his feelings for her at the beginning were not requited. She has a definite role in it and his perception of it. There are some interesting things there as well. She is an interesting character, and she's sort of single-minded about what she does. So in many ways, Jim Harper and Rachelle Janoux are sort of opposites. He's the everyman, and she is this single-minded, very rich person who is definitely not the everyman type of person.
No, she's not. She's very driven and determined with what she's doing for the company. And she, as you say, she's not really interested in Jim until he becomes an unwitting test subject for their product. So if he can't be sort of interested and friendly with Rachelle, he finds another young woman, a young woman called Linda, who will befriend him. And she was played by an actress called Maria Lennon. And she'll help him come to terms with what's happened to him. But as you might guess, this being a conspiracy theory thriller, she's not necessarily all she seems to be. And there'll be some twists and turns along the story as we go on, which will help and hinder him in equal measures, I guess, Brian.
Yes, a number of the characters have several twists and turns and go through a variety of things, and she's definitely one of them.
And then, of course, we need a bad guy. So we have the actor James Duke playing a character called Danielle, a male Danielle, but with a European pronunciation. And he is the main security chief for the Reisinger-Jeannot drug company. He's the character who first suspects that Jim Harper has infiltrated the conference when he shouldn't be there. And he's quite a nasty character. He's obsessed with tracking down Jim Harper once he goes on the run. And he doesn't mind hurting people along the way in order to do that. He's absolutely devoted to Rachelle Janoux. He's sort of protective of her. I suspect there's hints along the way that his interest in her may be more than just professional. But he's our villain of the piece. And quite dogged and determined and nasty in his pursuit of Jim Harper.
He's a henchman almost worthy of a James Bond film. He's not quite as out there and bizarre as that, but it definitely has a bit of that flavor to it.
Yes, and we'll mention a few other James Bond parallels as we go along.
We also have Dr. Viveros, played by James McCarthy, who was the scientist who discovered the side effect on the Russian pilots and their apparently telepathic connection. And he will, of course, be back later in the story and comes back now and again. And he is probably unique in this in that he is a scientist who also has a conscience. And I think it's pretty clear from the beginning that he does. but he's about the only one.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he is the one that's most concerned about the Russian pilots right at the start, isn't he? And he brings their plight to the attention of Rochelle Jeannot, with perhaps consequences that he didn't foresee.
Indeed. We also get a Russian pilot, played by Steven Jen, who visits Jim in this strange connection, this strange dream world, and seeks his help. And he's a big part of these strange sequences where we get this dream world or some type of otherworldly place, an otherworldly connection between the people who have taken Mentazone. And Steven Jen plays those scenes quite well, and you get something that is quite creepy and unusual and has a very different slant as compared to the sort of thriller elements where it's sort of on the run through Europe.
Yeah, they're very spooky, those scenes, and they're very well shot. Steven Jen is very good as the pilot. They're very tightly framed, just close-ups of his head and face, and Jim Harper's face as he sort of whispers in his ear in this strange dream world. And I don't think we're spoiling too much, Brian, when we say that there is a connection between anybody who's given Mentazone, that somehow they become connected in some sort of dream way, or maybe on the subconscious level.
Yes.
There's several hints along the way that it's not just the humans, it's also the dogs, the research facility, who share this connection.
Yeah, and that's the first place that this really becomes science fiction and paranormal fiction. And I thought the way that that was handled, especially in those dream sequences, was really quite good. It was a bit of a shock to the system when you go from the thriller-style thing straight into these supernatural sequences, but it was quite well done.
Yes, they are very effective. We'll come back to the dream sequences later on, but they are creepy and well done.
What are you doing?
I'm getting out.
Why?
I appear to have crossed a bunch that are bigger than the Mafia.
Why did you do that?
5 parts testosterone to 1 part brain. I actually think they want to kill me.
Isn't that illegal?
I'm really not joking about this.
What happened there? Is that blood?
I don't know.
Now, we should talk about Stephen Gallagher, who wrote and directed October. He is a British novelist and TV writer who has done quite a lot over the past few decades. He wrote a couple of serials for Doctor Who. He wrote Warrior's Gate with Tom Baker in 1981 and Terminus with Peter Davison in 83, both of which had interesting elements to them. Terminus is not remembered as a favorite, but there are some interesting things in it. And Warrior's Gate, like October, has some interesting and surreal kind of things into it. So I think he does like those types of elements as a writer.
Yes, he does. And of course, that spills over into his novels, because he is a genre writer who has a string of science fiction or vaguely paranormal novels to his name. And we'll mention a few of them. He wrote a novel called Chimera, which was itself adapted into a TV series. He wrote the novel October before it became a TV series, which he would later obviously adapt himself. He wrote a novel called The Kingdom of the Bones, which I believe he took some of the title and some of the premise of when he came to write an episode for the Murder Rooms detective show on BBC, which was loosely based on Arthur Conan Doyle and some of the inspirations for the Sherlock Holmes character.
Oh, okay.
He also wrote for TV, apart from Doctor Who. He wrote for a horror show called Chiller, and he wrote a couple of episodes for the BBC's very successful 1990s sort of spy tech gadget show, which was called Bugs. So he was doing that in the 90s as well.
And as you mentioned, Damon, he adapted his own book, Chimera, for ITV in 1991, which maybe we'll get to cover on British Invaders a little later.
Yeah, it certainly fits into genre stuff. It's got some more creepy elements to it.
Sure. Gallagher has also written for American television. Recently for Crusoe, which I think he wrote all of the episodes for it, and also for The Forgotten. So he's done quite a bit of writing in a variety of fronts over many years now.
Yeah, he's pretty successful and prolific, isn't he? Of course, the other series you mentioned earlier on, which he went on to write, was The 11th Hour, which I believe he sort of co-created, and he certainly co-wrote all the four episodes that were on the British TV version, which starred Patrick Stewart and the actress Ashley Jensen. And that later went on to be sold to America for a remake, where it had a much longer run, I think, Brian.
Yes, it had one season of 13 episodes in the States. And I believe he was credited on the episodes as the creator of the British series or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think 11th Hour and British series were certainly his, wasn't
yes.
it? Yes. And again, that's something that we may well get to in the future on British Invaders, because that's another very interesting show.
Oh, yes. And I think a lot of his writing has a very sort of idea-centric feel to it. He uses lots of ideas and often complex ideas, and they're very much woven through the story. In the 11th Hour, it was the science. In October, it was the medical science, along with these supernatural ideas. And, of course, the thriller things as well. But those ideas were very strongly woven into it. Now, looking at the production, the BBC encouraged Gallagher to develop October as a script, but then they actually passed on the final version. Gallagher took it to Brian Eastman at Carnival Films, and he was given the go-ahead by ITV in 1997. And from there it went forward. Gallagher took on the role of director himself, which he had done for some amateur films and things like that, and it proceeded towards production.
And in order to shoot it, they took the production on location. So they shot in London, but they also went to Switzerland to shoot in Geneva, and into the French Alps to go to Chamonix to film some of the mountain sequences.
It certainly shows that they were doing that filming in Geneva and Chamonix as well.
Yeah, it pays off. You know, they get these great locations, and most notably they get the cable car station, which is situated right on the top of the Aiguille du Midi mountain in the French Alps, which is a building which is 3,800 metres above sea level, so quite high up. And that produced a few problems for the production, because some of the production team were actually hospitalised with the effects of altitude, having gone straight up there in the cable car.
Oh, dear.
So it did produce a few problems. But it's a very dramatic setting, isn't it, Brian?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it looks fantastic. It's this sort of set of buildings right on the top of a mountain with some exterior platforms and staircases. And I think we both felt when we watched this that it reminded us of the very famous Piz Gloria restaurant that was used as Blofeld's base in the James Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
It did have a similar feel to that. And even the escape sequence there had a bit of a similar feel, but it was used well here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the place where the medical conference is held. It's the place that Jim Harper gets injected with mentazone and then has to escape from. And as you say, it does have that feel of the James Bond film with 007 trying to get away from Blofeld's base.
The stunt work in those sequences and in others were pretty good. It was quite good, I thought. And there were not very many special effects needed for this, which I think, again, worked well. You know, there were a few things with the dream sequences and the effects of mentazone, but those were done in a very simple way, without using lots of high-tech effects, mostly with lighting and crossfade effects and things like that. And it was quite effective, the things that they did, and it was nice that they didn't go, that they did not use many effects in it.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned it already, but the dream sequences shot largely on a sort of very dark set with a weird blue lighting. It gives it this very spooky and ghostly feel to it, and it's very effective. Limited effects, but works brilliantly, and really, you know, they stand out sequences, really.
Yes, and the music they had for it by Alan Parker added to that a lot and was also quite good.
Although we should point out, Brian, that that's not Alan Parker, the film director. This is Alan Parker, the TV and film music composer.
Of course.
But it's nice. I mean, again, it's a slightly creepy music, quite haunting, and it all fits in with the sort of some of the unpleasantness that's building up as Jim Harper begins to discover what's been done to him with this drug. and his connections with some of the other people who've also been injected with the drug. And we believe that October was first broadcast on ITV in April 1998. As we say, three episodes in a one-hour slot with a run-in time for the episode of about 50 minutes, allowing for commercials and sort of introductory session sequences. We're not sure if it got a repeat. As far as we know, it was just broadcast the once.
There isn't a whole lot of information about that.
No.
I think that just about covers it for this episode. Next time, we will talk about more of the story, in particular some of these really neat paranormal and science fiction elements that we always like to talk about.
Yep, absolutely. And as usual, we'll be getting to the highs and lows of this series. We're getting our reactions and reviews and more ramblings on about it. And getting to the part where we suggest whether or not you should try and find it yourself and watch it, because we get the impression this is not a terribly well-known series. It seems to have gone by without much notice. And we'll perhaps suggest to you why you should perhaps track it down.
Yes, absolutely. For a show that's as recent as 1998, it does seem not as well known as one might expect. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Thank you very much. Do come back for our next episode. Thank you very much for listening. This is Eamon from England saying goodbye.